Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, so we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, Text Number 8. Okay, so Ekas Twameva Sadasam Dvayam Advayam Cha. Swanam krita kritam iveha na vastu bedha. Agna natas twai jane vihito vikalpo. Yasmat guna vyatikaro nirupadikasya. Ekaha, the only one. Twam, your lordship. Eva, indeed. Sat, which is existing. As the effect. Asat, which is non-existent. As the cause. Dvayam, both of them. Advayam, without duality. Cha, and Swanam, gold. Krita, manufactured into different forms. Akritam, the original source of gold. The gold mine. Iva, like. Iha, in this world. Na, not. Vastubedaha, difference in the substance. Aganantaha, only because of ignorance. Twai, unto you. Jane, by the general mass of people. Vihitaha, it should be done. Vikalpaha, differentiation. Yasmat, because of. Guna vyatikaraha, free from the differences created by the material modes of nature. Nirupadikasya, without any material designation. Translation in purple by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Okay. So this is Lord Shiva speaking to the Lord. My dear Lord, your lordship alone is the cause and the effect. Therefore, although you appear to be two, you are the absolute one. As there is no difference between the gold of a golden ornament and the gold in the mine, there is no difference between cause and effect. Both of them are the same. Only because of ignorance do people concoct differences and dualities. You are free from material contamination, and since the entire cosmos is caused by you and cannot exist without you, it is an effect of your transcendental qualities. Thus, the conception that Brahman is true and the world false cannot be maintained. Purple. It's quite a long purple, but we're going to see how we go. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the living entities are representations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's marginal potency, whereas the various bodies accepted by the living entities are products of the material energy. Thus, the body is considered material and the soul is considered spiritual. The origin of them both, however, is the same supreme personality of Godhead. As the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita 7.4.5, Bhumi aponalavayo kamanabudhyevacha ahankrityame bina prakriti ashtada. Aperyamatastvanyam prakritim vidimepuram jiva bhuta mahabaho yayadam dayate jagat. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. Altogether, these eight comprise my separated energies. But beside this inferior nature, O mighty armed Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mine, which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. Thus, both matter and the living entities are manifestations of energy of the Supreme Lord. Since the energy and the energetic are not different, and since the material and marginal energies are both energies of the Supreme Energetic, the Supreme Lord, ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is everything. In this regard, the example may be given of gold that has not been molded, and gold that has been molded into various ornaments. A gold earring and the gold in a mine are different only as cause and effect. Otherwise, they are the same. The Vedanta Sutra describes that Brahman is the cause of everything. Jamadiyasyataha. Everything is born of the Supreme Brahman, from which everything emanates as different energies. None of these energies, therefore, should be considered false. The Mayavadi's differentiation between Brahman and Maya is only due to ignorance. Srimad Viragravacharya, in his Bhagavat Chandra Chandrika, describes the Vaishnava philosophy as follows. The cosmic manifestation is described as Sat and Asat, as Chit and Achit. Matter is Achit, and the living force is Chit, but their origin is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in whom there is no difference between matter and spirit. According to this conception, the cosmic manifestation consisting of both matter and spirit is not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivetaraha. This cosmic manifestation is also the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although it appears different from him. Okay. So we'll stop there and just say Mangalacharya. Om Gyana Timuranda Siya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yata Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tvam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, this verse is describing a philosophy, a way of seeing the world. And specifically, what Prabhupada is addressing here in the purport also is the conception that there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that he is completely separate from the material world. What is being said here, specifically, there is no difference between cause and effect. So, this is our philosophy. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, simultaneously one and at the same time different. Every living entity is acting according to their philosophy. Everyone has a philosophy. Everyone has a way of seeing the world, and based upon how we see the world, we then act accordingly. Every philosophy has its conclusion. If the material world has nothing to do with God, then the material world is up for grabs. Right? In other words, if the material world has nothing to do with Krishna, then the material world can be claimed by the living entities. Right? So what we are being reminded of here is that actually Krishna is a distinct person, but also this material world is his energy. Mama Maya Duratyaya. This divine energy of mind consisting of the three modes of material nature, Duratyaya, is very difficult to overcome. But it does have an owner. And that owner is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As long as we understand that, then we offer the owner that which belongs to him. The moment we think that it's something separate from God and has nothing to do with him, then we start to talk about how we can divide up the material world to control and enjoy for ourselves. In other words, if we don't recognize that the material energy belongs to God, we then try to become God. That's the philosophy. So everyone has a philosophy. Sambandha, the way that we see the world, leads to the abhideya. It leads to the way that we act in the world. And then that leads to the prayojana. It leads to a certain type of outcome. So the first point is, actually, the material energy is Krishna's energy. Now the question then becomes, if it's all Krishna's energy, why do we not see it that way? Why do we not see it that way? Ultimately, everything is Krishna's. In that sense, ultimately everything is Krishna in a specific sense. Why do we not see it that way? Now imagine this. So there are some places in the world where you get hot springs, okay? So you actually go to that particular place in the world and the water is coming out of the earth and it has a certain temperature. It's a hot spring, it's hot, okay? Now, that same water, it will go downstream over a certain distance. So the people who are right near the hot spring, if they touch the water, they feel that heat, that temperature. The same living entities, when they go further downstream, if they touch the water, it's cool. Okay? So it's one stream, one source, but there are different experiences that people are having from the same hot stream. What determines the difference is their proximity to the source. If they're close to the source, the water feels hot. If they're further away from the source, the same water feels cold. So in a similar way, even though everything is Krishna's energy, our perception of it is dependent upon how close we are to the source. That is Krishna. So Vaishnava means one who is close to the source. In fact, by being close to the source, we experience everything as spiritual. The further away we go, to that degree, everything is perceived as material. So the question that every devotee is meant to ask themselves is, how close am I to the source? And that closeness means relationship. Relationship makes you intimate to another person. In the material world, we have two unfortunate dynamics going on. The first unfortunate dynamic was the forgetfulness of our relationship with Krishna. This was the first real lack of misfortune. So what happens is, there is a living entity, there is a task or an activity, and there is Krishna. Right? So what's meant to happen is this. When we, as a living entity, perform a task, we perform some activity for the pleasure of Krishna, That task, that activity is called devotional service. And every time that we perform some activity for Krishna's pleasure, what that does is it binds us. So there's you, there's Krishna, and there's the activity between us. And then the more we do that activity, the more it binds us in this compact of love. So devotional service draws you closer, more and more intimately close to Krishna. Specifically, every time we do an activity for Krishna, there's always reciprocation. There's always reciprocation. We're sometimes sensitive to the reciprocation, and sometimes we are insensitive to the reciprocation. But there is never a time that one performs devotional service sincerely for Krishna and there's no reciprocation. There's always reciprocation. So that loving bind, you service Krishna, binds us, draws us closer. So the first dynamic in the material world is that we've forgotten that dynamic. Right? We've forgotten the transcendental relationship of binding ourselves more closely and more intimately with Krishna. But there's also a second dynamic that's been lost. So the first one was the relationship with Krishna. Now in Kali Yuga, the relationship is so damaged that we even forget how to relate to others, other human beings. Okay? So even as we've forgotten our relationship with Krishna, in the past, where there was some shadow of piety, what you had is humankind, a task, and humankind. So you had one living entity, an activity, and another living entity. So when the living entity performed some activity for the pleasure of another living entity, at least man to man, there was some type of relationship. Okay? But in Kali Yuga, even this has been lost. So what happens in the past is you have the living entity, an activity or a service to another living entity. And again, man to man, there was closer connection and relationship. In Kali Yuga, this has been forgotten. In Kali Yuga, you have the living entity, and then we see other living entities, and we bring the other living entities, and we use them to get the task done. So not only have we lost the focus with Krishna, we've also lost even human-to-human interactions. So instead of using things for people, we use people to get things done. So even on the material level, it's not people-centered. On the material level, the people are just something to be used in order to gain something else. Now this is really important. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that in a Vedic society, there were certain things which were cultivated. For example, the respect for seniors. The reason why this was cultivated traditionally in a proper traditional society was because the juniors would learn to cultivate this mood of respect, loving respect, affectionate respect for their seniors. And it was so cultivated to produce a certain samskar, a certain impression, so that when they met their guru, they already had a natural mood of loving, respectful submission and affection for their seniors, and now this would be directed to a transcendental personality. And ultimately, that would then unfold towards Krishna himself. So even the interactions on the human platform, if they are done properly, prepares us ultimately for our transcendental pursuits. So how we deal with all living entities is part of the exchange of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is explained in our philosophy, or rather, let's put it this way. We disagree with other religious traditions. All traditions say that service to God is greatest. We disagree. That's not our philosophy. There is one thing that we consider to be superior to service to God. And that is service to those who are intimately dear to God. Krishna himself explains, those who claim to be my devotees, they are not my devotees. Those who are devotees of my devotees, they are actually my devotees. So it is the communication and the loving service to the family members that makes one very intimately close to the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Now what does it mean? Because here we're speaking about the external world and how this is all Krishna's energy. What does it mean to understand that this is ultimately Krishna's energy? That this is actually spiritual? What makes it spiritual? What makes it spiritual is the mood. What makes it spiritual is the mood. And this is absolutely essential. I was discussing with one devotee yesterday about this particular point. It is such a subtle point that in our movement we can easily forget it, and to be honest, we usually do get this wrong. Because of the worldview that we are so much bombarded with, steeped in, that we've grown up with, we think it's all about the results. We think it's all about the gain or the outcome. But actually, Krishna wants the mood. Krishna is looking for the loving mood of the devotee. And it's very, very interesting. We have in this same Bhagavatam, this statement, Ahoy tukiya pratiyata yayatma supersediti. It is being explained in the Bhagavatam that this devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted. And the general consideration, again, of many traditions is that you do that because otherwise God is going to punish you. God doesn't like it when it's done in the wrong way. But in this verse, what is explained is Ahoy tukiya pratiyata yayatma supersediti, unmotivated and uninterrupted, in order to completely satisfy the self. Think about what is being stated here. If the devotional service is unmotivated and uninterrupted, then you become satisfied. If the devotional service is unmotivated and uninterrupted, you become satisfied. Otherwise, it doesn't matter what the living entity does, there's always this sense of emptiness inside. Therefore, our consideration is, you can be a multimillionaire, you can be powerful, you can be famous, you can have so much external material facility, and you're not going to actually be happy. Therefore, there are certain places in the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada speaks about this. I was listening to one lecture by Prabhupada on the way here. And he said that you're just completely wasting your time. Isn't that interesting? And he uses this term specifically. You're wasting your time. Why? Because you want to be happy, and you're doing all these other things which will never make you actually happy. So it's incompatible with your goal. You're looking for happiness in all the wrong places. There's a story someone told me once. There was a man who was searching for his keys. He'd lost his keys. And it was quite a dark road, but there was a lamp on one side of the road. So he was searching for his keys frantically. So someone seeing him searching so frantically, they came to help him. And they said, what's the problem? He said, I've lost my keys, so I'm searching for my keys. And they said, okay, I want to help you. Let me help you. Where exactly did you drop your keys? The man said, I dropped them on the other side of the road. So the passerby was confused. He said, I don't quite understand. You're searching for your keys here, but you're telling me you dropped them on the other side of the road. Please explain, why are you looking on this side then? He said, I'm looking on this side because this is what I can see. So we're like that individual who've lost our happiness in one place. It doesn't go anywhere. The happiness is in one place. But we're searching for it in all the wrong places. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to help one to locate their real happiness. What makes the material spiritual is your attitude. It's a very, very powerful thing. Again, it's very, very subtle. What makes something material or spiritual is your attitude towards it. Prabhupada in this purport goes on to quote this Nimbanda Krishna Sambande, Yukta Vairagya Mukite. He talks about this, and then he also quotes Anyabilasta Shunyam Jnana Amadi Navritam Anukulena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakti Uttama. That's our formula. That's our prescription from transforming the material to the spiritual. It's our attitude. Our attitude transforms an activity into loving, devotional service. And when it has the attitude, then it hits the heart. It is a fact in our spiritual journey that our journey is not linear. It's not just, you know, you practice and you go from where you are all the way back to Godhead. We usually go through ups and downs in our devotional service. And because, again, of the conditioned nature that we have and how we're bombarded day in, day out through marketing and other things, the idea is that you're a successful devotee when you get something done. But Krishna doesn't care about the result as much as he cares about the mood. Right? Think about this point very carefully. What it means is you can go out and you can distribute 100 books and you did it and your mood was terrible. You were rude to people, your mood was kind of very materialistic. You came back to the temple, you were proud. I'm superior to all these other lowly devotees. They didn't distribute as many books as I did. And in that so-called activity, you've actually managed to displease Krishna. You've managed to displease Krishna. Because the mood determines whether it's devotional service or just an activity. And when we perform it with the right mood, it does something transcendental. Not only does it spiritualize the things that we are offering to the Lord, it actually spiritualizes our very consciousness. The spiritual world is characterized by the mood. You understand? It's characterized by the mood. Everyone in the spiritual world has a mood of loving, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His associates. So what we do here is qualify ourselves to go back to that spiritual world. So in a sense, we're in the spiritual world right now because we are in Vrindavan. But the spiritual location of Vrindavan is also covered by the Lord's protective energy as well. So the question is, how do we go beneath the covering? Right? How do we see Vrindavan for what it actually is? Again, it is actually your mood. It's our mood that makes all the difference. So, cause and effect. How do we understand and always see the effect intimately related to the cause? By love. And how do we cultivate that loving mood? It is something that we practice at every moment. There is prema, or love, and there are those emotions which are in pursuit of that love. So when you perform devotional service in a favorable mood, Right? So you may perform your devotional service out of gratitude to Krishna. Right? You remember how Krishna has been so kind to you at various points in your life, because there's always reciprocation. Different things that Krishna arranged for you in your life. Different ways that he's helped you out when you were in real need. If you remember that, it enlivens your devotional service because it invokes your heart. And when your heart is in the process, you draw this relationship between you and Krishna closer. For someone else, you may remember just how attractive Krishna is. You came to the temple one day, you saw the deities and you thought, wow. Right? You thought, Krishna, you look good today, right? You saw the way he's dressed, the beautiful way that he is positioned on the altar. And your heart just felt something for him. So we want the devotional service to be something that's alive. The responsibility of every devotee is to keep your Krishna consciousness alive. And therefore our responsibility is literally to fly our own plane. From where we are now, all the way back home, back to Godhead. There'll be no ability to claim, well, the reason why I didn't come back, Krishna, was because I didn't like that devotee and they gave me a hard time. Right? It's not going to work that way. Because we're all responsible for the situation in which we find ourselves. Intimately responsible. And actually, we draw various situations in our lives. Isn't that interesting? Every situation that we are in is an opportunity to grow and to develop and to refine what? To refine our loving sentiment towards Krishna. This is what makes Krishna consciousness so incredibly exciting, dynamic, and enthralling. That Krishna will show each and every one of us his personal plan to bring us back from where we are all the way back home, back to Godhead. It's a very intimate relationship. A very intimate and loving relationship. Simple example. The very parents that you're born to, there's a reason why you're born in that situation. There's something to learn in that situation, in that sangha, for want of a better term. And the amazing quality of Krishna consciousness is that every time you catch the lesson, you move on even more quickly. Every time we learn the particular lessons, Krishna, what are you trying to teach me in this association? Why are you allowing certain types of individuals to come into my life at a certain time? What is the particular lesson, the particular refinement that I need to undergo in order to come closer to you? I was reflecting with one friend, and you, I'm sure many of you can relate to this. You see certain patterns play out in your life. Anyone had that experience? That there are certain patterns that recur in your life. And it is the duty of the devotee to be introspective enough to understand, why does this keep happening to me? What is the lesson that you are trying to communicate to me, Krishna? And if you're not sure, in the association of devotees, through sincere inquiry, Krishna will reveal things. He reveals, this is the situation that keeps recurring. This is why it keeps recurring. This is what I would like you to learn from it and to respond appropriately. Who are we responding to? On one level, you're responding to that individual. On another level, you're responding to the Krishna who is carried in the heart of that individual. So it's all about Krishna. These relationships are preparation for the spiritual world. So it's ultimately all about Krishna. And he's hiding within the heart of every living entity and looking to see how we are going to respond. Now it's very, very intimate because each and every one of us have certain strengths and weaknesses. I remember years ago, I had a dream. And in the dream, I just heard this voice. And the voice said to me, he said, for every devotee, there's a particular quality that helps them to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. Right? He said, for every devotee, there's a particular quality that helps them to make advancement in Krishna consciousness. And in the dream, the voice said, for you, that particular quality is, etc. And I was thinking, it will be the same. Well, literally, that was the point that was being made. For everyone, there's a particular quality that helps it to advance. Because we all have a particular weakness. We know where we're strong. And that's part of the problem, actually. Because we then look at the other devotees. Why can't they do this? You know, there's some devotees, it's so easy to be regulated. So easy. And therefore, they become a bit confused. I don't understand why you can't get up for Mangalati. I just don't, you know, like I sleep at the same time every evening. I get up earlier than Mangalati. I just don't understand why you struggle. Yeah, that's because we're personalists. For you, that's an area of strength. But there's somewhere else where you have some weakness. And where we are strong, another person is weak, and vice versa. So we're meant to help each other. Prabhupada gives the example of the twigs. He said, each twig by itself can be easily broken. You bring them all together, they all strengthen each other, and they become very strong. So we have some strengths, and we can deploy those strengths really strongly to move forward in Krishna consciousness. But we all have weaknesses also. We know where we're weak if we're honest. The other difficulty is that Maya also knows where we are weak. So the first thing is to acknowledge it, is to recognize it. The second thing is to, with that humble recognition, to work on it. Our philosophy is transcendental personalism, but we're not always personal. Unfortunately, we're not always personal within ourselves. We don't recognize our individuality and our individual path to Krishna. We're somewhat afraid of personality, to be honest. Prabhupada talks about this, I think, in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita in the purple. We're somewhat afraid of personality because we've been hurt by personality. We feel the lacking of our personality. Therefore, there's also a tendency to deny our individuality. But anything that you repress artificially, it just comes out again in some negative way later on. So the first level is to acknowledge, to recognize, to not be in denial, and then to humbly work on ourselves. And Krishna will help. This transcendental adventure is there and it's unfolding in real time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we have an opportunity to be dynamically involved. Again, us, an activity, Krishna. When the activity is done with love, you're offering your own particular loving mood, your unique loving mood, not someone else's mood, your unique loving mood to Krishna. And that means you have to be yourself in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately, when we are purifying our real nature, it comes out in its zenith as your eternal spiritual identity. So when we try to bring our real individuality to the lotus feet of the Lord, one day, by the grace of the Lord, you'll understand your spiritual individuality. Your spiritual connection, your spiritual relationship, as it unfolds in its eternal loving sentiments, service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world. So we have a great legacy, a great adventure that's unfolding, and great realizations to be had. And we need to accelerate that process. And the acceleration comes from the humility to recognize where we are, the humility to recognize our strengths and weaknesses, to work on the weakness, to offer that, not in a negative mood, but with some excitement. That if I can work on this, I can offer a better quality of mood, a better quality of loving mood to Krishna. And that loving sentiment, that loving mood, it also gets reflected in how we make an offering to this movement. This devotee I was speaking to, I was thinking about his tremendous potential to preach, to give deep insights and realizations to the Sangha of devotees. And I was excited to see how is Krishna going to unfold this person's gift that he's been given in the association of devotees. This movement is very exciting. It's very exciting for so many reasons, but one of the most exciting things, one of the most ecstatic things that you will see in this movement is that as you associate properly with the devotees, in the loving mood that you're developing for them and for Krishna, you'll see a miracle happen in their life and in your own. The love makes you strong, and I mean really strong, strong and dynamic. When you give proper loving association to the devotees and to Krishna, you are also watering your own devotional creeper. And the love that you give them, it makes them strong in Krishna consciousness, and it makes you strong in Krishna consciousness. I'll end on this point. There's a secular speaker who's a Christian, and he's very popular in certain circles. And he speaks about certain basic principles of behavior. One of the principles he talks about is telling the truth, right? Now he explains something very interesting. He says when you lie, what happens is you start to lose your integrity. You split yourself internally because you know one thing but you're saying something else. So what happens is you start to break something within yourself because you lose that sense of being integrated, of being cohesive inside, right? So he's saying that every time someone lies, they actually weaken themselves internally. They lose some of their internal strength. Now, we can understand that there's something even deeper to this. We know the absolute truth. So every time the living entity acts below what they know that they should be doing, right? Every time you deny what you actually understand, as Prabhupada said, he talks about preaching according to your realization. Every time we live below our realization, we weaken ourselves in some way. So when Prabhupada talks about the twigs and how when they're all together, they become strong, those twigs also exist within us. You understand? So the super soul is there. Every time you deal with a devotee in the wrong way, Krishna in the heart says, you know what? You shouldn't really have talked to that person in that way. You know? Every time we act below what we actually understand, you actually don't progress in the way that you could. So what does this mean for us? It means that in the years of devotional service that we had, for many of us, we're nowhere near the level of advancement that we could have been at. Because there were so many golden opportunities to act in according to a higher level of understanding or realization. We missed those opportunities. I was speaking to one devotee in London. He was saying that his friend was saying that the many years of devotional service that he's had, by the years of practice, he should have been at Bhava Bhakti by now. Right? He said that I think the reason why I've not made the progress that I should have made is because of offenses. There's actually five factors to our progress. Number one, you come in at a certain level from previous lives. Number two, it's the quantity of devotional service. Why? Because practice makes perfect. Number three, it's the quality of devotional service. Right? So you may do the activity, but what was the mood? So that's number three. Number four is the blessings that we gain from the Vaishnavas, from Guru, from the Dham, from the Shastra. And the last factor, which is the minus factor, is the freedom from offenses. So when you bring all these things together, then you can do devotional service for a set period of time, but if you do it with deeper quality and free from offenses, you will progress at a speed that will blow your mind. You will progress at a speed that will blow your mind. And we need to progress at speed, because the danger is if we don't practice devotional service properly, at some point, rather than questioning ourselves, we question the process. You start thinking, I've been chanting for 20 years, 30 years, I came to the temple, I did this, I even went to visit Vrindavan. No ecstasy, you know, no miracles. Maybe this process doesn't work. And because we are pleasure-seeking by nature, we will be forced to start to turn towards the material energy in order to get some taste, some ruchi. Huh? There is Chaste Rupa Bhakti and Bhava Rupa Bhakti. We as a movement are very good at this Chaste Rupa Bhakti, getting the external things done. And it's necessary to be active. But we have to remember the heart of devotional service is this Bhava Rupa Bhakti. It's not just an activity. It's an activity done with the right mood. So ladies and gentlemen, there's a miracle awaiting all of us in our devotional service. And that is the miracle of increasing the quality of our loving mood towards Krishna and the devotees. If we can do this more, we have the opportunity to improve and increase and deepen our devotional service literally with no end. Because the love you give pursues you. The loving quality of devotion, which is unlimited, the loving quality of devotion, it will come back to us, it will sustain us, and it will ultimately lead to pure, full-blown spiritual revelation. Okay, so it's past 9, so we'll stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janita Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Do we have time for questions or do we need to... Time? Okay, so any questions? Maybe you can pass the microphone. Can you switch it on, please?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much. Very nice, very inspiring.
Thank you.
So, Lord Brahma says in the Bhagavad-gita that until people become your devotees, their material attachment and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain food shackled.
Yes.
Learning to respect the senior family members will help us to become a devotee.
So I'll clarify that. So Jiva Goswami is talking about in a traditional cultured situation. What you're trying to do is develop a samskar, which is going to be favorable for your devotional service. That's what he's talking about. But, well actually there's no contradiction. We're respectful towards everyone, right? But the way that we respect them is in the way that Krishna is pleased. So the respect that we have towards others, it's done in a Krishna conscious way. It's not done blindly, and it's not done in a materialistic sense. But still, even the person who has no devotion, we still respect them as part and parcel of Krishna. But we don't take on their material values. That's where the difference is. So in our movement, sometimes where we've been immature, is that in the name of being Krishna conscious, we're actually disrespectful to friends and family. But what we're meant to do is, by being Krishna conscious, we're meant to show them that actually it allows us to behave better towards everyone. Not to take on their material values, but still to act in a way that is genuine, respectful, but within Krishna conscious limits. So it's not a contradiction to being respectful. It just means it has to be done in such a way that doesn't make us materialistic or unnecessarily rude or harsh. The flip side is also true. Where you sometimes have devotees who have trouble surrendering to authorities, even to their guru, it's because they had that issue because in their upbringing sometimes They had difficulty, their parents didn't treat them the right way. Therefore, anyone who's an authority, they have an aversion towards that individual. Does that answer your question? Thank you for your question. Hare Krishna. Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu.
That was a beautiful class.
Thank you for your kind encouragement.
So we understand with our Siddhanta and the Bhakti Yoga process, the more you give Krishna, the more he wants.
Yes.
So can we conceive of ourselves entering the spiritual world? We're still in a dilemma. We're still giving Krishna and he still wants more.
Yes, to give a short answer.
How can that be called ecstatic?
Fantastic. So Srila Prabhupada was approached. He was approached by one member of an organization called Mensa. They're a high IQ society. And they asked him a question. They said, is God so great that he can create something which is so heavy that even he can't lift it? Right? They asked Prabhupada this question. And Prabhupada said, yes. He said, Krishna is so great that he can create something which is so heavy that even he can't lift it. And then Prabhupada paused and said, and then he can lift it. And Prabhupada went on to explain that Krishna's energy, Krishna himself is always increasing. So he's beautiful, but the next time you see him, he's even more beautiful than he was last time you saw him. Right? So what happens is, the spiritual energy has this achintya shakti, this inconceivable potency. So yes, you go to the spiritual world, you offer him something. He wants more of your love, but you know what? Your love for him is always increasing as well. See, he's more beautiful, you love him even more. The spiritual world is always expanding. There's new adventures, new pastimes. Radharani never cooks the same preparation for Krishna twice. Because there's always more variety, more adventures. The love never stops, basically. So it's always ecstatic, more varied, more exciting and fresh. Does that answer your question? Thank you. Hare Krishna. If you could pass it back, please. Interesting. Well, I don't know the specific policies of your particular location, but I'll speak on the principle, and this is really important. The principle is that we have, in spiritual life, there's also a principle of chastity. Love is there for everyone. I remember what I was told when, the day after I took initiation, I was told something very interesting by my spiritual master. He said that it's just like a family. In a family, your relationship with a father is very special. But you also have your aunts and uncles, right? So there's different ways you can take it. On the one hand, you could say that means that you never disrespect your aunts and uncles. We never disrespect the wider family. At the same time, along with not disrespecting our wider family, your father has taken special responsibility for you. You understand? Therefore, there's a particular mood that your father has. While respecting all your aunts and uncles, you still follow your father's mood. So the founder of our movement, Srila Prabhupada, has a certain mood. We will therefore respect all Vaishnavas. But we need to make sure that we follow the mood of our founder, Acharya. Why? Because he has made taken the greatest responsibility for us. You see the point? And it's a different... Vaishnava groups will also have different moods, which are all still bona fide moods in respect to serving and loving Krishna. Yep. However, we still follow the mood of our founder, Acharya. And it's sometimes for that reason that there is still some respectful, loving boundaries, because we still recognize that this is how the founder, Acharya, this is the mood that he has given, and therefore we follow that mood in order to please. And we respect others, and we allow them to present the mood of their their particular teaching or their particular school, and all of this will come together to bring people back home, back to God, that as part of the global mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. You see? So it's like a community. You respect everyone in the community, but someone has taken special responsibility for you. So there's respect, and then there's additional respect to those who are taking additional responsibility. Make sense? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Okay, so we'll stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Janitai Gaur Premanandi, Hari Haribo.